When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Families have a lot going on. Let Ollie help manage the mental load with new cognitive health supplements for everyone 4 and up, like delicious Ollie Focus Pops or Ollie Mellow Pops for kids. And for parents, try 3 new Brainy Chews to help you focus, chill out, or get energized. Find these cognitive health buddies for the whole fam at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Everybody, ZDogMD, VP.
Back in the house.
We're back in the house, and we are exclusive for the first 3 days on our new joint venture with Marty McCary and Adam Sifu and John Mandrola and you and me as the editorial
and
board.
Others.
And others.
Yes.
As others as...
Iona Christia and...
That's right.
Yes, so we have a few others from Europe who are on our editorial board.
That makes us, by definition, sophisticated. So sensible medicine is the name of our new thing.
Yes, sensible medicine. It's for medicine, but with a little bit of sense.
Heaven forbid. And you know, it's funny that you have to add that to medicine.
Yeah, well, medicine is no longer sensible.
Yeah, man. I'm not sure how long it's been insensible. I mean, we talk about insensible losses.
You sleep with an N95 or a full respirator? What do you do there?
I sleep in a Darth Vader helmet.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because it just allows for the most possible ventilation.
That way you can at least
filtration.
Talk about abortion. As you drift off.
As I do, yeah, behind a mask. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So today, speaking of what we're going to talk about, we're going to talk about what are the aspects of things that would allow you to trust a paper, trust a communicator, trust a physician, trust a scientist? So this aspect of trust, because we are launching this new platform and this idea of who do you turn to? Because you got Medscape, you got MedPage, you got all kinds of stuff online, Twitter. Who do you trust? We're going to talk about some angry doctor tweets.
Oh, yes.
Oh, that's going to be good. we're going to talk about San Diego bringing back mask mandates for kids in the fall.
Yeah, actually, I think even the summer students have to be subjected to them, but it'll be an interesting discussion.
Oh, I'm looking forward
Remember,
to it.
Remember, the masks have to be there until we have vaccines for all ages, and then a few years afterwards, too. You just got to keep doing it for just a few more years.
Keep going.
No end in sight.
We'll talk about monkeypox a little. We'll talk about Fauci's retirement.
Oh,
and
that's
then
right.
Other things will arise as they always do. So, all right. Let's launch into this thing about trust.
Trust.
How does a lay person, forget lay people, how do other physicians, how do other healthcare professionals figure out who they trust? And during the pandemic, it became a question of like, well, do I trust Robert Malone, who was a, you know, quote unquote, vaccine inventor? And,
that's right. Didn't he made the mRNA vaccine.
That's right.
The only person I heard say that is him, but I never heard anyone else say that, but okay.
So. Well, it's a good contrast. So do you trust Robert Malone or do you trust the guy who taught me about Robert Malone, Paul Offit?
I see.
And what's the distinction? How would you know?
Do I trust you?
Right. Is there something about
my affect? I've never shown my back to you. Do you know that?
I've noticed that.
Yeah. I've always walked around the apartment. Yeah.
That's because we're both South Asian and we know that, dude, we're the most competitive. Just like, oh, dude, I'll kill
pounce,
you.
Pounce, yeah.
I'll take your views. I'll take your subscribers.
Yeah, you'll pounce. It's a really interesting question. And I guess... I mean, it seems to me, tell me if I'm wrong, that the predominant thing that most people use to quote unquote trust somebody is when they say stuff that they like to hear. I mean, most people
that's confirmation bias.
It's confirmation bias. It's like, oh, I really trust, he's a really knowledgeable doctor. Yeah. And why? Oh, he just kept saying things that fit my intuition. And why do you trust him? And then they can go find something about that person for why they trust him. But then you find somebody who has divergent views with a similar sort of credential. Oh,
credentials aren't everything.
And that person is doing it for ulterior motives. The person who agrees with me is doing it because they're noble, they're true, they're well-intentioned. The person who disagrees with me has an ulterior motive and their credentials don't count, but these person's credentials do.
I think that's a central truth of it. Yeah. I think there's also something to do with the, what's called a parasocial projection. So this idea that you see somebody, you kind of judge them a bit on their affect, on their likability, on how they connect with you emotionally.
How they smile.
How they smile. do they turn? Like, I've had so many people tell me two different things about me. And it again, I think it all relates ultimately to the confirmation bias down at the base. Like, what do I want to hear? And is he saying what I want to hear? And if he is, I'll find ways to like him.
Okay.
Right? But
what do they say about
you? The two things
they
say about me is, one, oh, they like me because they feel like I am natural, I'm unguarded, I'm authentic, and I'm trustworthy in that sense because I'm just going to say the truth because I don't have anything to lose. I'm not paid by any clinical enterprise. And they like the idea that I change my mind, that I'm somewhat nuanced about things and that—
And you're a centrist.
And I'm a bit of a centrist. So they like that. Then this identical person with a different set of beliefs will say, I don't trust this guy. He seems contrived. He's like a slick communicator. Mm-hmm. Like, he doesn't say and ah enough. Like, it's almost like everything's prepared. He makes eye contact with the camera, which creeps me out. He strikes me. And so
he's too smooth.
Too smooth.
Yeah, you're too smooth an operator.
And too much of a communicator, like a Dr. Oz knockoff.
That's how you talked me into that real estate venture.
It kind of is.
Dude, I'm telling you,
Arizona will have oceanfront property.
Eventually.
Yeah, right, if eventually. We keep up our current levels. But it came to a head because there was a prominent podcast that actually said the same thing about us.
They said
there's something parasocially about these guys that you want to trust them. They kind of like have a couple of bros telling you about stuff. You want to have beers with them, but then they go off the rails on the science.
And I got to admit, though, that in my life, I have rarely been considered, quote, one of the bros. Not exactly my style or mannerisms.
This podcast actually said Z-Dog is like the kind of guy that would show up to the club and you're in the DJ booth and he'd come up smelling of alcohol and try to tell you about all his worldviews. And I'm like,
they don't know you're in bed by 9:30.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like the guy who's like asleep at 9, wake up at 4, meditate for 4 hours. Like, yeah, I can't drink because I wake up with epigastric pain.
Yeah, he's sipping chamomile tea and after one drink, he taps out.
After this, we're going to get beers.
I know you can only have one.
Yeah, because otherwise I'll just be listen. Finney, I'll be up all night. I'll be up all night with epigastric pain.
Well, let me say one thing that I think is the kernel here, which is that there is one thing you pick up on people when you see them talk in a video format and a little bit on audio for the podcast I listen to that you don't get anywhere else. And that is a bit of a glimpse as to whether or not they're talking like they're a victim of a hostage video. Is Z-Dog... Is his view on community masking in part motivated because he himself is very, very scared, nervous, apprehensive? And we're going to talk about those angry doctor tweets think you'll feel it in just tweets, which is not the same as a video. You'll feel a level of anxiety and concern that makes you say, whoa.
Yeah.
And I would say that just because he comes across as a good communicator doesn't mean you should trust him. And I certainly wouldn't trust anyone just because I think they're articulate. But if somebody comes across sweating bullets, they're riddled with anxiety, they're nervous, then I'd say that, you know, I would be a little bit wary that maybe their concern a little bit is excessive or it's more worried about them than let me put it differently. They cannot objectively think about a policy issue if they have so much of their own emotions at stake.
That's right. Now, and the thing is, and it becomes a bit of a paradox because the question is, do you want somebody talking about an issue that they have nothing emotionally invested in it? Like, do you want a Spock-like figure who can just analyze it objectively and speak to it? And it gets to the heart of like what we're trying to do with Sensible Medicine, right? Which is a Substack. You guys can find it. I'll put a link there. The idea is you get a diversity of opinions. Often they'll disagree.
On Sensible Medicine.
On Sensible Medicine.
Yes.
Right?
We've got, we have people who are clinicians on the, 99% clinicians going to tell you stories about clinical work and clinical life. We're going to have Mandrola talk about how to think about cardiology. Who knows what Marty's going to say? It always surprises us.
Yeah.
You and I are going to do some things. And there's going to be other people. We've already starting to build our list of contributors. I've got some people who've expressed interest. They want to submit some stuff. So it's going to be a place to showcase a wide breadth of writing.
That's right.
And audio maybe and video. Who knows?
All of the above. I think what's interesting is this because I've kind of – for my own enterprise, I'm kind of like, well, I want to talk more about, things about, the present moment and things that I'm fascinated with and on that regard. But Sensible Medicine is kind of the space for us to apply whatever we learn into the medical space. So
into
like
the medical
if
space,
I'm contributing there, I might do pieces on how do you do social media as a healthcare professional and actually generate trust. And how do you open yourself to ideas that challenge your
and
confirmation bias?
Stay true to who you are.
Exactly. Be authentically you. Because that's easy. You see it happen during pandemic. People fall into the other downside of this idea of second selfing, producing a social media, which is the internalized capitalism of I want the views, I'm captured by my audience, there's some influence and even money involved and so on, and that rabbit hole that you can fall down. And you know,
that's
honestly,
why I cover those multi-center randomized controlled trials in oncology for the views, Z.
For the views. You're doing it for the money.
All those 200 people.
Yep.
Globally who are interested.
Love that stuff. They're but like, those 200 people make an average salary of $30,000 a year. They've like got money to throw at you. But it is interesting because the question of like monetary incentives, the people who like to throw stones about that, right? Which I think listen, you should question everything. That's great.
I think that's part of what I'm going to conclude, but we'll hear what you're
right. You should question everything, but you should also then turn that same lens on yourself. Like if you're saying question everything, right? Well, then what about questioning your own beliefs, your own fixed beliefs around whatever this conspiracy is or whatever your own capture is? Like there are a lot of public figures who like to throw stones at stuff, but then will never turn the lens back on themselves.
Okay, so let's do it for a sec. I mean, I would say what motivates, I'll speak for myself for doing this thing that we're doing right now, what motivates me, twofold. One, I mean, I decided to do health policy as my scholarly career focus. I think this podcast is to some degree an extension of that because we talk a lot about policy issues that are the issues of the day. I quickly realized that you don't just want to talk to other academics because there's only three other people out there. You know, I mean, you want to reach people.
Right.
And that's part of it because it's like if you have ideas about how the world ought to be, you would want to communicate those ideas. I think that's what motivates a lot of people. And then the second part is it's kind of just fun.
Yeah.
It's fun to come down here. And dude, take the afternoon, chat with you.
So the way we do our thing, so it's the same thing.
Yes.
Like people say, why are you not doing a video on BA5 and why are you not doing this? I'm like, because I'm not interested in it. I'm not interested in it. But when you text me and go, hey, what are you doing tomorrow? Because your schedule is much more tight than mine, right? Mine's like, well, can I fit you in between moments of me sitting staring at the wall? then okay.
Yeah.
And I get excited. I'm like, I don't care what we talk about. I know it's going to be a good, challenging discussion.
Good conversation.
Right? Yeah, good conversation. And so we can talk about monkeypox. We can talk about whatever, masking. It's fascinating. And then what it does is it actually creates a conversation, at least judging by the emails that we get, where they're like, hey, I love listening in to what you guys say because it's like how I and my friends talk about these issues,
right.
And yet there is a rigor about it. Because you're a policy guy and because I do think about this stuff, I'm much less rigorous than you. But,
well, you're rigorous.
But the nice thing is I'm a bouncing point for you to do your rigor. It becomes a very good thing. So with the sensible medicine thing, it's like now we bring in a bunch of other voices. So it's not just us shouting into the void.
Right.
It's a group of different people with different ideas.
Yeah, and we may not all agree. Yeah, of course,
exactly,
that's
right.
Okay.
Yeah, it's encouraged.
Well, it is encouraged on our thing, but is it encouraging the world these days?
Probably not.
Okay, let's come back to the trust issue. So one of the things I think, the part about the parasocial stuff I'm willing to accept is that if somebody looks like they're under distress, you know, obviously my trust in them is going to go down a great deal. And that's why even when people, you know, in the classic situation, when somebody's telling you about a crisis, they need to keep their cool. You know, isn't that the old story about a CPR? The first pulse you check at a CPR
is your own.
You check your own because you need some level of, talk about distance. Distance helps you think about things because if you're panicking.
Yeah.
So much, then you're probably going to make a mistake.
It's reptilian brain running the whole thing, thinking fast.
Yeah. But of course, simply because you're not in a distress doesn't mean you're right. Of course, you're mostly still wrong.
Right.
I don't know. I on my little episode, I talked about all the different metrics from how do you judge somebody? How many papers have they published in peer review articles? Paul Offit, I think, has published quite a bit.
Yeah, quite a bit.
How many total sites? But of course, the limitations of that are you can be the middle author on a bunch of stuff, and middle authors don't do that much.
Right.
You can get your name added to a lot of things. Some of the work you do could be mediocre or plodding or not interesting.
Or just like going with the flow of what you know gets published.
Correct, right? Yeah. You play
you're
the game.
You're not challenging anything,
Yes. I mean, I always said that like I take someone's CV in my mind, I cross off all middle author, I cross off things that I don't think they wrote where there's one older person on the paper and two younger people where I feel like the two younger people wrote it all and the older person getting the credit. You know, I cross those off and I'm left with a set of articles that I think they may have actually contributed to.
Right.
But then I like to read the articles because I want to see, are they really challenging things? And then I like to read other articles related to say, were they the first person to say that? Or are they just kind of copying or paraphrasing what others have said?
Right. You know, for me, that's very, very valid heuristic for figuring this out. It's funny with me, it's a This is not scientifically valid, but it is a internal heuristic where I can feel whether somebody is nuanced in their thinking, whether they're willing to change their mind, whether they're able to look at different angles, how absolute they speak, and what their flexibility is. Now, Offit's interesting because he was classically typecast as somebody who was just the pro-vaccine or die. And he's shown that he's still very much about vaccines.
Of course, like when they're proven in work, he is pro-vaccine.
Exactly right.
He is that, but
he's really about doing things correctly.
Yes.
And he's been wrong about stuff and he'll say it. And he still may be wrong about stuff and eventually will say, oh yeah, that wasn't quite right. And he points out where he's biased. He goes, I see kids, that's what I do. So of course I'm gonna say vaccinate under fives. And I think that's great. And he puts it out there. He's reasonable, he's thoughtful, he's polite. Those are the parasocial things that then make me say, oh, okay, it's quite interesting. And he tolerates a ton of hate and still lets it roll off him.
Yeah.
Now, you could compare to some other pro-vaccine physicians.
Go on.
That I will not name.
Okay.
But they come off as absolutist. They come off as alarmist. They come off as it's about them.
Well, yeah. But don't you think part of it is that like they don't actually know the data? Like, I mean, just because you get an MD doesn't mean you actually know a lot about where data comes from and how it should be interpreted. Paul is somebody who has proven time and time again he has a very nuanced understanding of the data. What was that thing he said to you in your podcast? He said that the ratio of neutralizing antibody from Pfizer to Moderna was different.
Right.
And that difference did not translate into a meaningful difference in severe disease or death.
Right.
Because Moderna, of course, with a higher dose, generates more antibodies than Pfizer.
Right.
But they didn't get the commensurate reduction in severe disease or death.
Right.
Ergo, that merely because you're showing me that the antibody titer is higher, you have not yet persuaded me that you're likely to have a reduction in severe disease or death because I know from Moderna, Pfizer. So that's a very – it took – like he's the first person I heard articulate that little point.
And he does that routinely with these points that you're like, oh, I never even looked at that and saw that. And now you're articulating it. You see it. You make the connection.
Yes. You articulate it.
And you articulate it.
And I can verify it because I can go pull up the packet.
It's right there.
It's right there.
And why can he do that? Because he's done this for years. So there's an expertise component.
He has a deep expertise.
A deep expertise. But he's not blinded so much by the expertise, although I suspect there's some bias. And he'll say that too. And that's why somebody like that I find deeply trustworthy, as does much of my audience, even the more anti-vaccine component of them actually are starting to go, hey, this guy actually is kind of reasonable.
Yes.
I'm just hoping they'll listen to him about childhood vaccines.
Right. I mean, the ones that are plummeting.
Right.
Yes.
Plummeting.
Plummeting.
Around the world.
Around the world.
Like 80% uptake now.
It's terrific.
It's really bad.
It's going to lead to many plagues.
Right.
I mean, you
yet
know,
another side effect of our response to this plague.
That's what I think.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Okay. So back to the Paul Offit point and the other doctors. I mean, I think that this was always, I mean, Paul Offit and many other doctors were on the right side of childhood immunization.
Yeah.
But Paul Offit understood why, and they didn't really understand
why.
You took somebody who doesn't understand why and when vaccines are life-saving and miraculous, and you give them a new situation and new data, they cannot process the data.
Right.
Okay. But I don't know. I mean, I come back to, there's nothing about Paul Offit's CV versus, I mean, there are many people out there who I think his CV is worse than Paul Offit. But there are also some people whose CV is like on paper similar to Paul Offit, but they just say a lot of crazy stuff that I think is totally wrong, not supported by evidence. For instance, Paul Offit is a professor. He's at the University of Pennsylvania. I believe he holds like some chair of vaccine communication or research or something.
Right.
He runs a lab in vaccines. Now, there's some other people out there who run a lab in virology or vaccine science, but they say a lot of crazy stuff. And they have zealot views, and maybe they themselves are personally afraid, but they can't process information well, in my opinion.
Right.
There are other people out there who are professors. They're also not always like Paul Offit. They're not nuanced. They're dogmatic. They're rigid in their thinking, and they're scared. There are other people out there who may have an endowed chair, like Paul Offit, I think it does.
Yeah.
And they're also kind of crazy. So I feel like, I don't know, it's not the credential.
Yeah. And so how would a lay person ever figure this out? They can't.
They can't.
They're going with their confirmation bias. They're going with affect. They're going with parasocial projections. And the truth is, so what do we do then? How do we at the Sensible Medicine platform then start to help unwind some of this stuff? Because the truth is, like, why are we working with John Mandrola? Because he's eminently rational. He's written extensively on topics that we feel he's thought through very carefully.
Right.
We do have some confirmation bias, probably both you and I, in the sense that we agree with a lot of what he says about medical conservatism, meaning like
being judicious
in how we do medicine.
It's a really good question.
It's a good question, right? Because because one of the questions is, if we really believe, like, if we're so firmly in the camp of like, hey guys, like doing stuff to people instead of for them can have side effects that are bad. Are we just, are we blinded by that confirmation bias? Or is it just that we're trying to find truth and we think that's more truth and so we're going with that? And then what's to differentiate that from someone who like loves Robert Malone because he's saying what they believe, which is, you know, the government is creating a mass formation psychosis around vaccines and so on.
Okay. That's a very good question. I guess for the sake of argument, let's imagine that you and I listen to some podcasts, and this is true. We listen to some things that are outside of our wheelhouse, biomedicine.
Yeah.
So we happen to have an expertise in biomedicine, but I listen to things in the law and I listen to things in economics that are really outside my wheelhouse, including monetary policy and Supreme Court. You know, I've talked about this on this podcast before.
Supreme Court porn, I believe, was the topic we talked about.
I put on my RBG necklace and my dress.
Yeah. You do cosplay with RBG? I love it. RBG cosplay. That's great.
Hey, RBG had some good lines.
She did.
But she also kind of stayed a little long.
Yeah, she was there. Yeah. But I mean.
And refused to give up the seat when Obama could have appointed a liberal and so kind of left.
Oh, is that true?
Yeah. RBG had an opportunity. And I think Obama approached her and said, if you retire now, we can appoint a liberal. She didn't. And then unfortunately, she thought she could live to a Hillary Clinton presidency. That didn't happen.
Oh, wow. That's tough.
She passed away under Trump, and that's what led to the conservative court.
I didn't think about that.
It's a bit of narcissism. Actually, it's related to Fauci's retirement. Do you want to go there?
Let's talk about Fauci's. Well, yeah. Maybe that's the next thing we talk about. But you were saying something unwinding this confirmation bias question.
Okay. So how do I do it? I guess I would say that, like, what do I listen for in things that it's not my domain? I mean, I don't like people who just tell me facts about their world. I like people who explain why those are the facts.
Right.
And I think John Mandrola is a very gifted guy.
Yeah.
I know this to be true because I've worked with him a lot over the years on many papers and I've talked to him a lot. John Mandrola believes his job is not just to tell you what John Mandrola thinks. He wants to take a study, simplify it as simply as possible that it preserves the meaning, but no simpler, you know, sort of that Einstein idea, tell you those facts about it, and then show you why he believes what he believes and have you reach the same conclusion. Now, somebody who disagrees with John Mandrola, I think they don't always do a good job of breaking down and explaining why they believe what they believe and why it reaches a conclusion. And when I listen to these law podcasts, the podcasts that I don't like as much are ones that are hand-wringing. Supreme Court did this and, it's bad. It's bad. It's bad. Mm-hmm. And then I want to say, like, okay, yeah, I agree. It sounds bad. But again, I don't know anything about it. Why is it bad again? And what should they have done? And why should they have done that thing instead of what they did?
Yeah.
And, you know, I listened to that Akil Amar from Yale. He does a really good job of explaining. He explains like where he agrees with them, why he disagrees, where they went wrong. And he had something on, this is such a tangent, but I'll just tell you 2 seconds. Okay.
Yeah.
So is this whole thing about like these exclusionary rule in law, which apparently means that like if you're a defendant in a court of law and the cops were not supposed to stop you, but for whatever reason they stop you and they find you have like a bloody knife and you're guilty of murder.
Yeah.
I think in a court of law, under the Fourth Amendment, you can say like that knife shouldn't be admissible in court because it was wrongly gotten.
Right.
Like they found it when they weren't supposed to find it.
Right. They didn't have a warrant or whatever.
They didn't have a warrant. And I think the Supreme Court has built this huge jurisprudence around like when something is admissible, properly gotten, when it's not wrongly gotten. And that leads to a lot of people's the fate of the trial.
Right.
This evidence. And Akil Amar says he approaches the same question. And he thinks that the way we have thought about this is all wrong. What are the things we actually want? Like we want to put guilty people in prison and innocent people to let go. We want not to intrude the freedoms of innocent people. And then he's saying that like throwing out evidence that is guilt, that is proof of the crime after you have wrongly stopped someone doesn't prevent you from wrongly stopping them. It just lets a guilty guy off, right?
Yeah.
And you need different rules for wrongly stopping, like punitive damages if you were like innocently harassed by cops.
Yeah.
But when you find something, even if you didn't mean to find it and you find it and it proves guilt, you should be able to use that.
You should be able to use
right.
that.
Okay.
Right.
So, and then he also appeals to the Constitution as to, and by the way, if I'm totally butchering this because I've only listened to, you know, I'm not an expert.
Hey, man.
Okay. This is my understanding of what he's saying from listening to his show.
I have a parasocial projection that I trust you about everything.
Okay.
So you're a lawyer as far as I'm concerned.
Well, I mean, what do I know about this? I don't know anything about criminal court. Okay. So I want to say to the audience, I don't know about this topic.
Yes.
However,
yes.
This is what he has taught me from listening to a show. And I would say, and people can tell me if I'm wrong, but I do think he's making good points. And, you know, again, I'm not the person who's going to decide this issue, but the fact that I, a doctor who knows nothing about the law, really, you know, can listen to that and feel like I've learned a few things, you know, that's nice.
Yeah.
And that's what I hope that a layperson will get a sensible medicine. They'll be like, look, I don't know. I know I can't put my, you know, my nickel down that Mandrola's right, but, you know, Mandrola makes good points.
Right.
And then, but sensible medicine is also for people who are cardiologists and who are doctors.
Yeah,
absolutely. Who can really interrogate.
Because there's going to be deeper level stuff on the site that's contributed by people that are very smart in their field that are doing that. You know, why I like Marty is his work on price transparency, on healthcare policy change.
Yes.
Like that, like forget about all the COVID stuff. That's all well and good. The reason I love Marty is that he's always been passionate about like sticking up for people who cannot stick up for themselves, like our patients who are sued into oblivion by massive healthcare systems, by, you know, fighting against middlemen like group purchasing organizations and PBMs that ratchet up the cost of healthcare. Like that's how I first met Marty.
That's how I first knew Marty too. Yeah. And I would say, that's a good feature. But Marty is willing to speak truth to power, even when it's not in anyone's best interest to criticize that.
Yeah, including his own.
Including his own.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's not in his best interest. Yeah. Like, what is that? Out-of-network billing or—
Right. Surprise out-of-network.
Surprise billing. Marty's been against that from the outset. Yep. That's something that a lot of doctors, they pull their hair out and, oh God, they may write to us and say that we need to surprise bill these patients. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's problematic.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's always been good on that issue.
Yeah.
By the way, there's another issue that really keeps sticking in my craw. You know, and you know, I've been very interested in health policy and how money flows in the system. And I think there's so many things that are problematic. But one thing that I keep seeing people say on social media that is just so wrong is they're like, insurers are just denying care to make more profits.
Right.
I was like, that's just not how they make money.
No.
They make more money.
They pay the care.
If they pay the care.
That's right. And why is that?
Because they are limited as to what percent of their revenue can be profit.
That's
a cap set by the Affordable Care Act.
That's right.
And if you can tell me we're ordering pizza and I can only eat 20% of the pizza, I want to order extra large.
Extra large with all the toppings.
With all the toppings.
And that's why you see these things like $1,300 or $13,000 COVID tests.
Yes.
And a strep swab that was $25,000.
And the insurer paid it.
They
didn't, I mean, they have some obligation to like buffer year to year variability. But long term, they're not really in the cost containment business.
That's right.
And like, look, the healthcare system is broken, but if you want to go and throw grenades, you should at least be accurate and throw the grenades in the right direction.
That's right.
There are problems, and I think the insurance company could be made a lot better.
Yeah.
I don't think they're doing exactly what you think they're doing. They're doing something different, and other players are doing different things.
Yes.
But it really irritates me. Marty, of course, he has always sought to understand how it's broken and throw the grenade.
And he meets with all the players. Like he'll meet with the CEOs of insurance companies. I mean, he knows all these people. He's very connected.
Surprised we made the Rolodex.
I know. Every day, like when Marty texts me, he's like, hey, I'm in town. I'm like, why are you texting me?
Why are you texting?
Go like hang out with like Elon Musk or somebody.
Want to get some soup?
Yeah. By the way, does this soup, the fish in this soup, does it have bones? Because, it's really true. What's interesting too about all the incentive stuff is that it does take a lot of understanding and knowledge to then be able to get up on a high horse and say, this is wrong. And that's what he does. He puts that work in advance.
It's a tangled ball of wire.
That's right.
And anyone can go in and pull on the wire, but it helps to pull on the right part
of the wire.
Yeah, right part of the wire to untangle it.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, and it's a mess. Of course it's a mess.
Yep.
There are jokes about how it is a mess. In fact, the fact that it's a mess is part of why the system is allowed to be so broken because it's not so easy to fix.
Nobody thinks they can fix it.
Right.
It's multifactorial. I think ultimately it's got to be it's a phase shift solution where you work on different parts independently. You start speaking a language that points at what a future system might look like. And then there's a phase shift where something snaps because when we run out of money, you can talk about climate change and all that, but when the sea level is here on a New York building and it's starting to flood like the Treasury and stuff, then somebody will be like, well, maybe we should geoengineer something.
Right.
But until then, it's like, and it's the same with healthcare. It's reaching the point though now where, you know, how many, what is it, 1 in 5 American bankruptcies are due to healthcare costs. Cancer, which is your specialty.
Seems a bit high. Go on. I've seen the bankruptcy literature.
Yeah. What's the take? Is that an incorrect statistic?
You know, actually, I shouldn't have said anything. I guess I would say I'm not sure. I remember there was some pushback a long time ago about this statistic.
Yeah, I do too.
Yeah, but now I forget exactly.
Well, it's the same as the, like, you know, and you and Marty had it out over this was the
third leading cause of death.
Third leading cause of death is medical errors, right?
You know, people, as much as I love Marty, you can go pull the tape. I wrote an op-ed very critical of his thing, but
yeah.
But, you know, I want to come back to this trust thing one more time.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess that's the theme
to point on that.
Yes.
Look how we're even disagreeing about things.
Because I actually don't know enough. Yes. The way
that's how it has to be.
Right. Like, look, look at the way you ask. Am I wrong about that?
Yeah. Right. Tell me how I'm wrong, and actually, so I can understand if I am wrong.
I don't know that. And I'll have to look it up after the show.
Yeah. But either way, the question is, we're questioning.
The question is, we're questioning.
So back to your trust issue.
Back to the trust issue.
Yeah.
I think I listened to Russ Roberts on Econ Talk. He's from Stanford University, and he's been doing this since 2006. You know, podcasting before it was cool. And why do I trust? I mean, I like him a lot. I trust him because. The other thing is, as you listen, other things you can look for. When you look at somebody's body of work, is there a cohesiveness to their worldview? Do they blow, like, I don't know, did Vinay Prasad say, we need randomized evidence for the first time in the pandemic? Turns out, I've been saying that for a long damn time. You know, I've been saying the same thing. I'm always saying it. I want better evidence because I know when you don't have good evidence, you can be misled. Consistency. Sometimes you get from these podcasts like, does somebody ask erudite questions? Are they asking thoughtful questions? Do they pause and check themselves? Mm-hmm. And do they speak bombastically? Like, you know, anybody who says that, like, I don't know, what does it say? Like, I just saw this recently, another person retweeted the usual, like, if we all wore N95 masks for 2 weeks, the pandemic would go away.
Right.
They all have to say that. But there's similar bombastic rhetoric on the other side, which says that I think masking a child is child abuse.
Right.
And I would say that, there are certain instances where I would, you know, well, first of all, I'm not a believer that there's good data.
Right.
So I don't believe in doing things that don't have good data.
Right.
But you don't need to say that, like, a child wearing a cloth across their mouth, like, they might do it for, like, a Spider-Man costume or something.
Right.
I mean, it's hard for me to believe that this is child abuse.
It's hyperbolic, emotional stuff that then makes you, if you already agree with them, you trust them implicitly.
Yeah.
If you disagree with them, you dismiss them entirely. So what if someone came out and said, okay, so let's just look at the data on child masking. Like, okay, is it abuse? Well, there's really, if it is, we're missing the big picture of it. It's probably much more subtle than that.
And then maybe like there's some kids that you can say like they have disabilities. It's very cruel.
Exactly,
it's
right.
Cruel.
Special needs.
It's cruel.
That's right.
But to call it abuse.
Yeah, that's a very loaded term. And even then you'll have to show me data that shows me that it's abusing.
Abusive. Right. And then also like, meanwhile, we should actually have like the last 50 cases that came into the Department of Child Protective Services on real abuse.
On real abuse.
On real abuse. And you tell me, you really think this is the same as that?
Yeah.
What they're really
doing. Tell me what that,
what this, what this parent did to this kid.
That's right. That's right.
And then I'll be like, okay, so let's tone it down. I mean, it's something in between. But I do think that, I mean, my view of policy is that the burden is on people who want to do things, especially year after year after year, which will bleed into this San Diego.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ. At some point, I used to always say, and people give me a hard time, I said, randomize or shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
You know, really, if you want me to do something for year after year and do it for millions of people and give you billions of dollars, randomize or shut the fuck up. I don't want to hear it.
Yeah.
Show me data that it works or shut the fuck up about it.
Right.
And they haven't. They have never randomized kids. There's no cluster data.
Because it's a parachute.
But I know, but even they can't believe it's a parachute.
If it
were a parachute, then why does the Twitter full of, even though we wore an N95 always, we got COVID? Because it's not a parachute.
It's not a parachute. It's just in the real world, it just doesn't work the way you imagine it might, extrapolating from first mechanistic principles.
They're like in the mannequin.
Yeah, in the mannequin.
The mannequin.
You can see the,
and by the way, the mannequins are always white, isn't that?
You know what?
Yeah, it's
racist. Racist. You do a randomized controlled trials. You better include mannequins that
are multiracial,
and also you know, how identify with different genders. The whole thing. You need the whole thing, dude. But you know, it is. That's a good segue into what San Diego's doing before. Oh, actually, let's talk about Angry Docs. Angry Docs.
Oh, Angry Docs.
Angry Docs. Because that relates to the trust issue, and it relates to issues around what is emotion. What is anxiety, neurosis, and what is actual scientific data around anything relating to things where you're going to ask other people to do something for you. For example, I want you to wear a mask to protect me. Okay, I'm going to mandate that. I'm going to say you can't go in a store, you can't come in my business, you can't go to school unless you do that. All right, then I need to see real good data that's going to help.
Yeah. I would think that should be not controversial.
Yeah.
And also, like, I don't know, is it crazy to say that, like, what year are we in, dude? I mean, what year are we in? They're talking about, San Diego is talking about re-implementing the student mandate.
Yeah.
For a while, people said, like, until vaccines are available for all ages, we're going to have to keep doing this. But vaccines are available for all ages now.
Yep.
There are. So what is your reason? And then they're like, well, you know, there are many kids who haven't had COVID. Most of the kids have already had COVID.
Yep.
And then all of the kids are going to get COVID because it's going to keep circulating forever.
Yep.
So even if you think it's doing something, 5%, 10%, what is your goal? What is your goal? But by the way, I don't think it's even doing 5%. I think it's probably close to zero because I see how people wear it.
Yep.
And
especially in school.
Especially in school.
Yeah.
And then it has negative externalities. They're saying that, if the kid doesn't want to do it, they just don't have to come to school. There are a lot of troubled kids who are looking for reasons not to come to school. You're giving them the easiest one. Don't wear a mask. Send me home. That's not good for them. They need school. Yeah. What have we forgotten what the whole point of school is? You take somebody who doesn't want to be there and you teach them some shit so they're not a terrible menace to society. That's what school is.
Right.
I want to go to school? No.
But what's going on with overdoses? They're going through the roof. Like, what's going on with other externalities in society? We don't look at the area under the curve of damage.
We certainly don't
look at it for schools. And so San Diego is now saying, okay, even for summer, even for fall, you're going to have to wear masks again. And again, when you make a major decision with public school, so this is money
public
that
school.
We've spent to send our children, get the education that they need in order to not be menaces to society and maybe be a little better than that. And you're saying you got to wear a mask, which, by the way, a cloth mask.
It is a cloth, right?
It's a cloth mask.
Are they? Oh my God. We'll come back to that. But okay.
So what do we teach? Yeah, no.
This is what the doctor says.
Tell me these tweets. Yeah.
I couldn't believe this. Somebody sent me this thread. Because I always aim to be honest, transparent, and when needed, vulnerable on Med Twitter. I'm not going to hide this hot off the press result. I have COVID.
No. It's not so.
Fuck. Fuck, fuck. Fuck, fuck, fuck. I'm just reading the quote.
No, you're just reading it. The kids in the backseat that are crying right now for the bad language.
There are six fucks in the tweet.
Yes. And a fuck who wrote the tweet. I'm kidding.
I'm also not going to hold back on the forthcoming Twitter rant. I've made no secret of the fact that we've been traveling internationally. So, I mean, if you're really worried about getting COVID.
Don't travel internationally.
I mean.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm not saying I don't know. What do you want?
Right.
I was like, why did everyone at that bar yesterday give me COVID when I was drinking peacefully? I mean, I don't know what you
want. By the way, Florida does not count as international travel. Just FYI. That's how liberals think. They're going to another country.
Third world country. What? Third world state.
DeSantis, that dictator?
Okay, I'll skip over some parts. We strategized about every possible precaution we could and would take, but alas, it wasn't enough. My husband tested negative on his post-travel test, but we've been together unmasked. Feels like the clock is ticking. I'm going to skip over some stuff that maybe we know there were positive cases in the seminar group we were in. The first cluster of what appeared to be post-travel cases popped up last Thursday, Friday, and clearly become a super spreader event. We were among the strictest mask wearers. There were times where we couldn't avoid indoor dining with the group, but otherwise we all wore high-quality, well-fitted masks at all times indoors, all caps, including on the buses and in the crowded outdoor areas. For indoor meals, we minimized time with masks off for bites, and sat by door. Okay, well, here's the thing. Like, sitting by door does not COVID fight.
Yeah, no.
Sitting by door.
No.
That may open and close.
This is magical thinking.
The door.
This is a magical thinking.
How could I get it when I was by the door?
You know, I did a couple Hail Marys. I threw some salt over my shoulder.
And again, if you really, really don't want to get COVID.
Yeah, stay home.
you're eating with a group of people indoors. I mean, what do you think is going to happen?
Right.
I mean,
I can't wait for the punchline.
It gets worse.
Yeah.
I was exposed during our fucking travel debacle that started 72 hours ago. How am I feeling? Honestly, jet lag, tiredness feels like that. Not total body fatigue. I have a mild, dry, scratchy throat, but also just spent the better part of 24 hours in planes. I have post-nasal drip, but I ran out of my singular and Flonase with our travel delays. How am I feeling emotionally? Here comes the rant.
Oh, no.
I'm fucking pissed at the world and humanity right now. I'm fucking pissed at selfishness and refusals to vaccine or mask. The current vaccine variant is surging, especially abroad. It's COVID. What COVID? And there's a lot of caps. Fuck in this thing. here's the one thing that I don't get by this.
Yeah.
I'm fucking pissed at the selfishness and refusals to vaccine. But people who are vaccinated can spread.
Yeah.
And probably this person got
BA5,
it from a vaccinated person.
Yeah.
So what does it matter?
It makes no difference.
Why are you pissed at those people?
Well, this is the magical thinking. It's a sanctity. It's like they violated the church, the sanctum that I've built with my N95s and my four vaccine doses, and yet I am still impure. Why? Because you are impure.
I sat by the goddamn door.
I sat by the door. What were you doing? Eating with your lips out.
Your fucking lips. Even when the first case in our group were announced, masks were encouraged and recommended. They should have become mandatory, all caps, on the spot.
Oh my.
Mask wearing was, all caps, fucking terrible at planes and at airports. And then here, all caps and periods between all the words, just wear the goddamn mask. Jesus Christ.
So let me see, scratchy throat. Little bit, feeling a little bit off, emotional. Like, that's what you got out of COVID. So did you ever ask the question, why aren't people wearing masks? Because they don't care.
Can you think
personally.
Of anything worse than scratchy throat?
I mean, I can think about
it. I can't think of anything.
There's nothing.
No, there's nothing.
I mean, it's really the asymptote of horror that we all strive to avoid.
Have you ever had a scratchy throat?
You know what? I don't want to admit it publicly because there's so much shame involved with getting the disease.
Well, I wouldn't have had a scratchy throat if it weren't for you.
I sat next to the door. I don't know what the fuck you were doing.
Okay, then here. My family and I have avoided COVID for almost 2.5 years during witnesses that this is the telltale. During which time I have, all caps, busted my ass and driven myself to physical and mental burnout while caring for post-COVID patients and trying to advocate for COVID risk mitigation. I got COVID because hashtag COVID is not over. Yeah. And then it says I'm looking into Paxlovid and I'm a healthy, vaccinated 41-year-old.
Okay, Paxlovid.
And then I think somebody sent me another tweet where the person started taking Paxlovid. And ironically, you talk about things that actually hurt other people.
You're going to generate resistance to
exactly.
the Paxlovid.
No, that's what they don't see.
Yeah.
Actually, the unvaccinated person is not harming other people to the degree the healthy, young, vaccinated Paxlovid taker yep. is harming other people by generating resistance.
Or the Fauci who takes the second course of Paxlovid.
Oh, yeah. Hail Anthony, evidence-based medicine Fauci. Okay.
Yeah.
Here's the thing that scares me about it. I mean, jokes aside, what actually scares right. me about it, if you really hate somebody so much, and this person, it seems to me like they hate the unvaccinated, they hate
They're quite angry.
The people who don't mask.
Yes.
Just wear the goddamn mask. They hate these people.
Yeah.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Should you be taking care of post-COVID patients? Can you imagine your mother? Hypothetically,
right.
Your father, your mother didn't want to be vaccinated.
Didn't want to be vaccinated.
Our families grew up in rural parts of this country.
Right.
Let's just say they watch yep. a lot of Fox News yep. or, whatever.
Yep.
They just didn't want to be vaccinated.
Yep.
You tried. You
yep.
did your best.
Yep.
You're like, mom, do it. Then let's say she gets COVID. She goes to the hospital and she's being taken by a doctor who's like just really hates these people
yep.
and thinks that they're hurting other people.
Yep.
Do you trust the doctor?
Not at all. And again, how much of that though, you're right, absolutely right. If you take what she's or he's tweeting at face value, you would say, yeah, this is not a person I want touching my family member if they're somebody who's like vaccine hesitant or something. But at the same time, how much of what they're doing is pure fucking theater? Like they're
you don't
doing
think
it
they feel this way.
Purely to self-aggrandize, to get attention, to get the likes, to create this persona, to virtue signal, to do all this other stuff, make themselves, because they don't give a damn about their scratchy throat in reality. That's my take.
Really? Interesting.
I'm just intuiting.
I think there are people like you
there
talk.
Are, no, there are. There
I
are.
Think this person is genuinely
okay.
crazy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, not crazy, but
I haven't
crazy
seen
word.
Their other tweets over time, right. but even I mean, then it's kind of okay. like a second self. It's like, this is this persona they put
it's
out
interesting
there.
Interesting you say that.
But I don't
mean,
know.
I think, I mean, you know,
But I've met people like that.
Oh, that are just like
that are just that rabid, but it's rare. And more often, they're like right. they are a little concerned, and they're
for kinda, every person this afraid. There's two posers.
That's right. There's yes, two posers.
There's two posers.
There's two people.
There's totally
out there
two
going,
posers.
I wore the damn mask. Hashtag, you know, stay home.
And like, I don't know. I mean, can we really be honest here for a second? Like, isn't it convenient for your life narrative that the bad people who are doing all the bad things yeah. are also of the other political party with yeah. whom you disagree on other substantive issues?
Absolutely.
And they're the bad people. And isn't it just like a little too convenient that how was it that these political tribes were split and they did all the bad things yeah. and we did all the good things and we're the good people and they're the bad people? Isn't that like really fucking crazy?
Well, you know,
you really think that? I mean,
it's one of the great untruths of Jonathan Haidt, right? That the world is a struggle between good and bad people.
Now, what about on the other side? What do they think? They think that we're the people with good senses of humor. We're the people who don't police speech or language.
Yeah, yeah.
And those people are uptight,
yep.
elitist.
Yep.
But on that side, sometimes they overreact to jokes. They
Many times.
Yeah,
it's equivalent, actually.
And they stifle, they censor books that they think shouldn't be taught or whatever, or they tell teachers what they can or cannot say.
Yep.
They also, you know.
1,000%. Yeah. And you know what's interesting is how you see that distinction. Do you see them as equally kind of behaviorally challenged in that sense? Or do you see them as, well, they're less bad than X? Depends on where you live.
That's right.
And how you're seeing the local neurosis. Like you and I are in the Bay Area. We're surrounded by crazy
people like this.
People
thread.
Like this person.
Yeah, yeah.
But then if you go to Texas, you'll talk to people who are more on the left and they'll be like, man, this place is crazy. You should see the kind of thing. They'll shame you if you put a mask on. Like my old father, who's like very sensitive, he went to go to his vaccine. There were people telling him, don't get it.
Right.
Yeah. So it all is kind of like, again, it gets to that confirmation bias.
Right.
And what you're
but
seeing.
I mean, I view it like fundamentalism in all its forms is bad.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
You know, two people are blowing up the building for different reasons,
right,
different
exactly
zealotry.
Right. Exactly
but they're both
right.
like, I would say it's very bad to tell an old person who's going to get vaccinated, don't do that.
Yeah.
Don't do that.
And people will do that.
Yeah. And it's very bad to tell a 2-year-old, wear the goddamn mask, you know?
Or get off my plane.
Or get off my
plane. Get off my plane. Yeah.
I mean, they're just two crazies. Yeah.
So what's the editorial board role of sensible medicine?
We're sensible.
Yeah,
we're
trying
not
to be sensible.
We're just
trying to
be crazy.
Exactly.
Like, oh yeah, you're old, you need a shot, you're young, you're good.
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. How hard is it? We're sensible.
Sensible medicine.
That's all we are. We're just sensible medicine.
Well, our fans will say that for sure. The ones who write to us in the positive.
But
we'll
many of the people, our haters, are crazy.
Yeah,
I would say more of our haters are on this side of the crazy spectrum.
Oh, yeah. I would
than
say most
on the other side.
Now, what's funny is when you announced the Sensible Medicine project on Twitter and you listed the editorial board, a lot of people were like, Z-Dog. That guy's not heterodox enough.
Oh, I see.
He's so pro-vaccine.
Yeah, you're mainstream.
And so mainstream, why would you let him...
Why do we let a button down prude like you
on? My favorite is he was wrong about ivermectin.
Oh,
you thought it didn't work. I was like,
yeah.
Wait, I am?
Yeah. And you're like, he didn't even like it for river blindness. He was just like, it's better for them to go river blind than to take ivermectin. He was hating ivermectin since 82.
You know, river blindness is a great name for a band. As terrible as the disease is.
Yeah.
River
but we
blind.
Have ivermectin.
And we have ivermectin.
Yeah. But I mean, yeah, it's a great name.
For that.
River
blindness.
Blindness.
Today, opening for Rush, it's river blindness.
River blindness.
Rush
so
can't
be prepared
play
to be blinded by the river of sound.
That was Phil Spector, the River of Sound.
River of Sound. So where do we leave off here? I guess Sensible Medicine has a lot of people. They're meta research. There are a lot of different people on this Sensible Medicine editorial board, and there will be more to come. They're all people want to be a part of the project. And again, there's no one Sensible Medicine. It's not one thing. I mean, people have different views. That's fine.
Right.
Just as long as they're not like totally crazy.
Yeah.
But even if they are totally, I mean, I don't know.
You know, maybe they can post and we can write an editorial.
We'll take
response.
A crap on.
I mean, one
of the rules of Sensible Medicine is if there's a single author on it, it's only the responsibility of that author.
They own their opinion.
They own that.
Yeah.
Because I'm not anyone's mother. I can't be policing anybody.
I don't want to.
I don't want to.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I don't want to be hall monitor.
Right.
John Mandarola doesn't like CRT, cardiac resynchronization therapy. What do you think, Z? I was like, I don't care what he 20 days.
I'm still mad at Marty for saying we'd have herd immunity by April.
Oh, the Marty thing. Oh, God. Marty
is
Marty.
It's the Brady Bunch, man.
What? And, you know, again, it's a one-sidedness because, okay, one, I think, you know, you can go read what Marty wrote in his op-ed. Two, you can realize that herd immunity is not a static phenomenon. It's a transient phenomenon. That's means right. R less than one in the setting of a certain amount of immunity, which Marty may have technically been right on. Marty didn't see escape variants. Nobody did. But you're so mad at Marty. Why aren't you mad at, here's my question. If you're mad at Marty for quote unquote getting it wrong, why don't you go to Twitter circa 2020 and pull every photo of a professor outside with a mask on?
Yeah.
And tell me.
Well, they were wrong.
They were wrong.
So why aren't you?
Why aren't you shaming it? Why did you? And by the way, they posted extremely bombastic tweets. Look at me going on my 8-mile run my mask on because I'm better than you. Yeah. One, because I can run 8 miles, which is true.
Now, that's impressive.
It's impressive. I can't do that. I can do it with a mask on. Oh, I was in the gym recently.
Oh, tell me about it.
Okay.
I went there recently too. Just to virtue signal.
I can tell. Look
just
how, to virtue look how signal. Huge you are.
Oh, it's my nipples are big. Yeah.
You're huge.
I tie weights to them.
I say, yeah, of course. That's routine calisthenics. Okay. 20-year-old.
Yeah.
Very fit.
Yeah.
Very healthy.
Yeah.
At least it appears.
Yeah.
But very fit looking. Yeah. Lifting. Huge weights.
Mm.
Okay. Big plates.
Mm.
Big plates on that barbell.
Mm-hmm.
Boom. Throwing it up there.
Mm.
Like it's like the combine. Just crushing it, you know? I was like, man, is this person competing? Okay. Wow. Huffing and puffing. Okay. Wearing an N95 mask. Healthy or not healthy?
Insane. Mentally ill.
Yeah.
Nah, that's being aggressive. I would say they don't understand risk.
They don't understand risk.
Yeah, they don't understand risk.
But I would say this. I would even say, it might even be unhealthy. Mm. Because like, yes, under the right circumstances, N95 is protective.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't actually know. I mean, there's no studies.
Yeah.
There's no studies that show that you can like huff and puff so hard with this, you know, crappy piece of plastic fabric garbage on your face. Maybe it's not good. I don't know.
We don't know because no one's looked at it. And the truth is there's no benefit to it except to virtue signal.
Yes.
So in my gym, you know, I'll see the people who wear N95s are elderly.
Okay.
They are still, you know, walking around doing exercise. They look like they're in reasonable shape, but they definitely are elderly. And I'm like, you know what? That person understands their individual risk. They feel like they don't even want to get infected.
That's fair.
They're wearing a well-fitted N95 and they don't look like they're killing themselves with the
right,
exercise.
Right, and they're not looking like they're killing themselves.
They're not killing themselves. So I was like, good work. Everybody else not wearing masks.
In my gym, I look around and I'm like, you know, the person here who's got the most to worry about is, it's me. I'm older than y'all.
Yeah, I'm the one who's going to drop dead. I know. I've got factor 5 Leiden and prothrombin 202-10A heterozygous.
Oh, wow.
Like, I get infected with COVID, which I have not had a documented infection
yet. Right.
I'm
going to
clot every square inch of my vasculature.
You learned this on, what is it called?
23andMe.
23andMe.
Yeah.
23andMe.
Never do that. It's just a huge mistake.
How will I learn the consistency of my earwax?
Exactly, that it's wet or dry.
Yeah.
Well, it's funny, that actually gets to our whole over-treatment thing because by testing that, I made myself panic about all kinds of things. Now I've gotten over it and I'm like, I don't care. If I'm ready to clot, I'm ready to clot. I don't even take an aspirin, but not that it would help. But the other thing I did was I did a panel. So this is the thing you can do now. You can order your own lab tests online. There's different companies that'll offer it, and then you show up at Quest or wherever and they'll draw it. And it's vastly cheaper than going to your multi-system massive health plan that because I have a $6,500 deductible.
Jesus.
So for the family.
I know why you're doing that. Tax purposes. I know what you're
doing. Yeah, I'll write it all off because I can do a show about it. Yeah.
Or maybe you can do a health savings account.
Well, I do have one.
That's a benefit for rich people.
Yeah, like, it is. Like, it's a rich person benefit.
It's a rich person benefit.
And even doctors don't know how to use those things properly, so
no,
they can't make wise decisions.
Teach me offline.
Well, the thing is, when do you withhold care?
Yeah.
So what I'm doing is I'm effectively withholding care because I didn't go to my primary doc at Sutter because I didn't want to spend another $500 for like 4 labs, a lipid panel.
If you can do your DRE at home, you don't need to go.
Exactly. I'm constantly finger up there, constantly. I have a real-time constant streaming for prostate cancer. It's like a windshield wiper over my prostate.
I wonder what you were doing the other
it's
day.
It's what I do. Because the minute I detect so much as an aberrancy, I'm having my whole prostate out. I'm getting it robotically done. And when I'm impotent, that just means I don't have to pay for the vasectomy.
They do the MRI.
Yep.
And then they follow you
and they
keep biopsying and biopsying.
That's right.
And usually there's some prostate left after all the biopsies.
Who doesn't want a needle in your anus? You know? I mean, up there.
They call it active surveillance.
That's right.
Surveillance is something relaxed, low stress, but the active part
that's right.
stresses me
that
out.
That involves a needle. So I said, okay, it's been a couple years since I got labs and my lipids were a little goofy last time. So I was like, maybe I'll recheck. So I went, I ordered online because I was like, oh, it's $40 for like, I got a CBC, not a CBC, I got a lipid panel, a ferritin, and I'll tell you about that one in a second because you're a hematologist.
Yeah, I'm curious.
A ferritin, I got a total testosterone just because I was curious because I was like, you know what? I just don't care about all the things that used to make me angry.
Five.
I bet my testosterone's five. I bet it's super low. And I like all the things that used to upset me when I was a young man, like they don't faze me at all. And you could say, oh, that's meditation. Or you could say, no, he's just got low T. So I thought I'd test that. And I think I did one other thing. Oh, hemoglobin A1C. Because we have family history of type 2. So I said, all right, let me do those things. It costs $48. Like out of, you know, I can use a health savings account, whatever. Fine. It would have cost me $500. If I'd gone to my regular thing.
And you would have to pay because of the deductible.
Yeah, but even if I use my health savings account, that's my money.
Yes, I know.
That's a decision problem.
Because if you don't use it, you can put in your retirement.
Put in your retirement or keep it, roll it over, whatever, whatever. So that all being said, I did that today. I actually got the blood drawn and the place was totally understaffed. It was this Quest Labs. There was one person there. There was a woman who was furious, an elderly woman.
Oh, you don't know the answer to these tests.
Not yet. But
why'd you test the ferritin?
Okay, so this is why I test the ferritin. This is why I want to run this by you. Like doing on tests that you don't want to know the answer to when they don't change anything. Yeah. So years ago when I owned a clinic, we partnered with LabCorp and we would pass on cash pay prices we would pay for labs, like $3 for a CBC. Like it was like $8 for a lipid panel, like ridiculously low price.
The original Theranos.
The original Theranos.
Okay.
And we pass it to our self-pay patients who are paying our monthly fee to access primary care. We go, but if you want labs and you don't have insurance, you can get them directly through us and we won't mark them up at all.
Yeah.
And so I would go and get my labs drawn all the time. And I'm like, I'm going to get all the things because I was an idiot. So I ended up getting a ferritin just to, as part of an iron panel. The ferritin was elevated. It was like 400 or 500. And I was like, oh, this is weird.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So now I got, let me look at the other iron panel. It's fine. And then I was like, well, do I have any other signs of inflammation? No, CRP was undetectable. Like everything was like normal.
And did you do HFEG mutations or like
So this is what I did. As part of that era, I did a thing at Craig Venter had a company at the time, the guy who co-sequenced the human genome, and he had me come out and speak, and he's like, well, do your whole full sequence genome too.
Oh boy, he pounced.
And I said, sure, I'll do that. Uh-huh. And they looked at all the hemochromatosis gene testing, and it was all negative.
Okay.
So I had no, now unless there's another test I ought to do.
No, I think there's just no known gene mutation. There's a certain,
that's right.
There's certain alleles that are implicated. Okay, go on.
Right. So I didn't have that in the 23andMe. It came up blank on that too, but they're exome sequencing, so it wasn't as complete. Either way, it was all negative. So I tested again. It's still elevated. And so multiple times over the course of years, I tested it. Always elevated. LFTs are normal. Everything else is normal.
And what about your iron studies? Did you get TIBC iron?
All normal.
Oh, okay.
So no iron overload.
Mm-hmm. And do you have other markers of inflammation? Do you have CRP up and your LDH?
CRP, highly sensitive CRP was undetectable. Okay, it was very low. Okay. ESR was like 3.
Okay.
So all the stuff was normal.
I see.
And
I see. There's a lesson here.
Yeah. What's the lesson?
Don't test your ferritin.
Exactly. I was talking to hematology friends. They're like, did you do this? Did you do that? I'm like, how many dollars did I spend following up this lab that it's just I'm a rare abnormality where I have an elevated ferritin all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So what did I gain out of it? Stress, anxiety, poverty.
The only way to rest assured that you don't have a problem is liver biopsy.
No, yeah. Someone probably would have said that. We don't know all the alleles. You may still have hemochromatosis.
We'll do like liver biopsy, bone marrow biopsy.
Yep.
You know, MR liver. Yeah,
yep.
I mean, you get down this thing. I think it's a very interesting, question, which is that, all laboratory tests, what does it mean to be normal? It means like in a distribution of like normal, healthy volunteers, 95% fall within a certain interval. And then I think, so that's one part of the puzzle. The second part of the puzzle is like, we always do what we call quote unquote routine blood work in young, healthy people. But that to some degree is a screening strategy.
Right.
And the claim being made is that by taking somebody in a certain age range who feels totally fine, often looks very healthy, by offering this routine blood work, we can make them better off.
Yeah.
And I think, we could, again, not to sound like I always sound, you could do a randomized study to kind of ask if that's true.
Well, when they look at annual physical exams.
Yes. This is a BMJ meta-analysis, I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
The health checks.
Right.
And like most health checks and annual physicals like don't provide a benefit to the person.
Don't provide a benefit.
Yeah.
And you think about all the screening you're doing that shows up a ferritin like mine. And remember, you're a primary care doc. You've now got to deal with this ferritin of 500 in a young person. And you're like, does this guy have cancer? Does he have an inflammatory disease? Does he have iron storage disorder? Is there something else going on? What's happening?
That's why you'll be referred to heme. And they'll come to me.
And they'll come to you. Yeah. And you'll do a rectal for no reason. Just purely to do it.
Yeah. Can't even.
Yeah.
I think we had to learn how to do it in medical school, but I don't know.
I've had
too many occasions.
Did you have actors in medical school?
We did.
Learn?
Yeah, we did too. Standardized patients.
We had them at San Francisco, and we had a guy who he told us, he goes, I want you to, you can call me the Admiral if you like.
I prefer not to call you the Admiral, sir.
I'd like to call you sir. And I apparently didn't reach the anterior most tip of the prostate.
But he knew it.
And he knew it.
Yeah.
And he said, glove back and go back in. Because you did not feel the whole prostate. And you know what? I very much appreciated that.
That's good.
I knew damn well I didn't feel the whole, I was like, this doesn't feel like the end of anything here. Mm.
And you'll never play piano.
Not well.
Not well. Wow, yeah.
So anyways, we were back to-
What were we talking about?
Trust. Angry
how do you trust?
Trust, yeah.
How do you trust?
Nobody trusts us anymore. We said all the things. One thing that came up, fan had-
Oh, do you trust this doctor, angry doctor?
Not at all.
Yeah, you know.
I mean, but it's a parasocial projection. They may be the best doctor in the world, but how they project on social media is untrustworthy to my confirmation bias, how can I trust someone who doesn't understand risk?
But let me go further. I think that this doctor is one of the doctors who's been like always wrong about COVID policy.
Yeah.
And now I see why.
Right.
Because they're like 2.5 years, I quote unquote, busted my mental and physical health to avoid COVID. So that's why they were wrong on the policy.
Let's apply Jonathan Haidt's three great untruths to this person because they have cognitive distortions. The first great untruth is that which does not kill you makes you weaker. So this catching of COVID has now weakened them permanently. They're emotionally unstable.
Well, that's what long COVID is.
And that's what long COVID is the weakness of having COVID.
And what's the correct perception is that the best you could have done was to be vaccinated and depending on your age, the first booster dose.
That's right.
And depending on your immunocompromise, maybe the second booster dose.
Right.
That's the best you could have done.
Right.
But if you're going to live long enough in this world and you're going to interact with people, you're going to get it eventually.
You're going to get it eventually.
And so you should have more of a sort of like, that's life.
Yep.
I don't know. It's like taxes.
Yep.
And jury duty.
Yep. It just happens.
It just happens.
And
it's nobody's fault. And I was sitting by the door.
I was sitting by the door. So that's the second great untruth is trust your feelings. Use emotional reasoning. If something makes you feel a certain way, that is an indication about the truth of that something.
Right.
So this person is fucking pissed at all the people who didn't just wear the mask.
Goddamn mask.
Goddamn mask.
Goddamn mask.
I feel this way. Therefore, they are bad people.
Yeah.
Which leads into the third great untruth that person.
And goddamn mask is a cloth mask, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
Because otherwise it'd be
full of pores.
It would be an effective mask.
Exactly.
If it was a good one. But
it was a good. No, but they said well-fitting. They said well-fitting.
But well-fitting cloth. Mask.
Yeah.
But it was a goddamn mask.
It was a goddamn mask. Nonetheless.
Shouldn't it be a... It should be something. The goddamn shit is misplaced. I'm mad at all the goddamn people.
Yes.
Not wearing the mask. Not the goddamn mask.
That's right.
Just wear the goddamn mask.
That's right.
Or goddamn it, just wear the mask.
Just wear the mask.
Goddamn it, just wear the mask. Okay, anyway, back to you. Okay.
And that brings me to the third great untruth that the world is a struggle between good and bad people.
Right.
Yeah, and there's no nuance. There's no gray.
And interestingly, all the bad people are on the other political side.
Always.
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 And not on my political
that's
side.
That's right. Because it's in-group, out-group competition.
But the weird thing about me is I'm actually a political liberal.
You're right.
I'm a progressive, actually.
Right.
And there's this guy, you know, Anthony La Mesa. He's this, I don't know, he's a policy person who focuses on schools and global poverty. And he is a progressive like me.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like one of the handful of progressive voices that I found who's like, actually understands COVID and what it really means. Like, because I don't think it's the progressive philosophy that's bankrupt. It's that many progressives didn't take the philosophy and carry it to its logical extension. What is a progressive philosophy? I think it is, you know, we support doing more for vulnerable people to protect them and aid them in living a more equitable and fairer life. But what do we do with COVID-19?
The opposite.
Lockdown and mass. Yeah, we did everything that enriched the rich and punished these people who we blamed and scapegoated, et cetera.
Right.
Progressive policy to me is always about tolerance. Like, I don't know. Doesn't it mean to be a liberal that you don't hate people who are born in different states and have different views? Like, it's like just... Can we all love each other? Isn't that part of a liberal ethos? But they don't, they've forgotten the philosophy, so.
Yeah, and they don't see the cores of their own philosophy in the other side either.
Yeah.
So they don't see the compassion and the community-mindedness and so on in the conservative side, they're blind to it. And because it is an in-group, out-group thing, and conservatives don't see the positive sides of liberals because they see the excesses that show up in the mainstream culture, which is now dominated by those excesses.
And to be honest, I think that's the thing that is like will do the greatest damage to liberals, because like the excesses on the liberal side are just so prominent in the media.
Yeah, they're played up,
But then of course you're like, you get like angry. You're like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
I mean, if your slogan is defund the police and then people are like, oh, we don't actually mean that, then why is that your slogan?
Right.
Why is that your
slogan? Don't make it your slogan.
Don't make that your slogan.
You know, remember the days when it was the right that was sort of, those excesses were parodied in the media?
Yes.
Like it was the main thing. Yes. Like you would see like, oh my God, look what like, even Tipper Gore, who was liberal, was trying to do to music and censor it. And they, look what Reagan is saying about this and that. And it's like, oh, wow, that seems crazy.
Policing like speech and language.
Right. That's right.
That was what
the right used to do.
I know. When we were in the eighth growing up, we were old people.
It was the same. I know, right? That was the thing. Like it would trigger our moral antibodies. We'd be like, you can't tell me what I can say and can't say.
I know.
And now who's doing that? The same people we thought we were part in that tribe.
I know. I guess we're not. We're not on the cutting edge.
And now we're in the sensible middle.
Well, that's weird.
And it's not even a political middle. It's just a way of looking at things. You know, I call it alt middle, right? It's
the same thing. Because it depends on the issue where I will fall from, like, you know, economic or this or, you know.
Well, that's something that, so Jordan Peterson, who has this appropriate share of criticism for the way he's kind of gone to this very militarized way of doing things. He used to be quite nuanced about this stuff and he sees it quite clearly. But he says, you want to avoid people who are ideologically possessed. So they identify as liberal, or they identify as conservative, and they just have to click all the boxes. And this happens in COVID. Like, well, okay, if you're liberal, you got to click the boxes of stay home, wear the goddamn mask, close the schools, vaccinate every single human being 20 times, even if they've been infected, and so on and so forth. And that's ideological possession. Whereas what you're advocating is, no, just look at each issue based on the way you look at things. Try to use reason as much as you can, grow rationality. But don't totally ignore emotion, because emotion is a gut check sometimes on, is this person totally full of shit? Like when I see some people talk, I'm just like, oh, my gut just is like, this guy. Now, people will say the same thing about me. They go, my gut just doesn't trust Z-Dog.
Hmm.
And okay, I get it. So what is it? And then it actually caused me to introspect a
little. But you have to articulate what it is about them that you don't like.
So then you have to follow it up. And this is where I think people who criticize us sometimes will fail. They'll have a gut check response and then they'll fail to delineate in good argumentative fashion, like where are we exactly wrong? Like this podcast I listened to that was talking about the parasocial project, like, oh, we seem like a couple of buddies and we're trustworthy, but then when we go off the rails with science. Okay, so tell me, where did we go off the rails with science? What's your argument to the contrary?
Right.
And tell me where we had it wrong and how we might communicate it differently, right? Yeah. Then I'll listen to that feedback. But otherwise, I just think the parasocial feedback's interesting because it makes me think about how I communicate. Like, what is it about me that comes off as some kind of bro that gets drunk?
It's very interesting because maybe, and this is a way in which we're different people a little bit, because I think you are more emotional and into that side of thing, you know, in how you approach people. And I'm an ice man. No, I'm
you're more dispassionate and methodical.
Who do I trust? Like on Twitter and like social media, like and videos and podcasts. It's like almost never. It's never their presentation style. Because I even listen to shows that I'm like, oh, they have good banter, but I quickly like don't listen to them.
Yeah.
Because I listen to shows where the content is very dense and the arguments are very like tight.
Right.
Even if the speaker is bland and the audio quality is shite.
Right.
But beyond a level of shite audio quality, we all got to tap out.
Yeah, we got to tap out. Sounds like a Skype on a low bandwidth thing, you're like, dude, I'm out.
And then
this is going in my ears.
Like I just checking my headphones like, oh, did it stop? And then I look and it's like, it's playing, but the Zoom cut. I'm like, geez, at least trim your audio.
Yeah.
Try to edit your audio, man. Yeah. What are you doing?
It's terrible, man.
Terrible. Okay. Yeah. But I'm listening for content mostly. And then on Twitter, I look to see who's actually saying original ideas. And like so many people, like I'm like, literally not a word comes out of their mouth that
isn't just parroted from
somewhere else. And then And then like in my field of academics, I read people, I pull people's publications and I read them. And I try to find ones that I know they could have, they must have written themselves, like editorials where they're the only author or something like
that.
Nobody could have written it for them. And I read them. And then half the time I'm like woefully disappointed because you're like, I'm like, oh, don't you see that, like, first of all, your first and third paragraph contradict each other. Second of all, don't you see that these two ideas that you're presenting separately are actually subset, one is a subset of the other. And this idea that you're blurring together are actually two distinct concepts. So you could have reframed this and in a much more powerful way. And you could have said one, two, three, four, and made your three, 4 points. Or when people say 4 points, but it's actually just one idea that's said four ways. I'm like, you don't understand. You're not, you're just saying the same shit four times. I was like, so I see all these things and then I'm like, I can make my assessment. You know, people do it well is, you know, you read it and it, it feels as if there's not a word out of place.
Yeah.
You know, it's like perfectly perfect, done. You know? Yeah. Every sentence logical to the next. You know, so I that's how I trust people.
Yeah. Well, but you have criteria and you also have a, you have a discipline and a heuristic of how to look at it because it's kind of what you do. So that's very helpful. That's why like having you on the editorial board is probably a good thing. And, you know, you're right. Like my approach is much more bullshit meter, intuitive. And that's why I get things wrong more often than I'd like. But I'll often go back and go, yeah, you know, my emotional response to that was not the best response, and then try to in real time kind of process, okay, where did I screw this up?
But I guess, I mean, interviewing somebody in the speed of the moment is a much harder skill.
Oh, that's tough. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Because most of what you're doing is you're talking to somebody who you may have just met for the first time, sitting on this side of the desk.
Yeah.
And you're trying to like, that's a, I don't even think I'm good at that. Like I bring guests on my show and it is the hardest thing in the world because there's a boundary between, you don't want to invite somebody to my, like certainly my show, which is like some tiny show, and then like shit all over them. Like I'm not, I don't want to ruin someone's day. So I want to be somewhat agreeable.
Yeah. This came up actually with a guy, Chris Williamson, who has a podcast and he's had some guests on that are very controversial. And he was responding to these guys, Decoding the Gurus, who are a good couple guys, but they get a little strident about stuff.
I see.
I think they consider us to be potential gurus to be decoded at some point.
Decoding the Gurus.
Yes, that's right. I mean, again, it's good that they point out things, and I think that's important to pull the signal from the noise, and they're good people.
Decoding, debunking, chat, you know.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. I mean, it's low-hanging fruit to do that. It's another way to get a captured audience and so on if you're not aware if you're, that you're doing it. But they took a shit on this guy, Chris, and Chris went on their show and talked about it and was like, okay, listen, guys, like you're talking about me sending softballs. Do you understand what it's like to interview a guest in person who's hard to get? You're lucky they came on your show.
Right.
They're a big person, and then you're going to take a shit on them. It's like, come into my living room so I can take a dump on you. That's not how it works. What you do is you give them an opportunity to present their piece and you can facilitate and so on.
And push a little bit.
And you push a little bit.
Yeah.
You ask maybe what an audience might ask, but you're not going to drill on them unless that's your thing, in which case it's going to become very caustic very fast and you're going to find you're unable to actually have the conversations that you want to have.
I see. But half the people, quote unquote, decoding and debunking, they don't know enough to actually do it correctly.
That's the thing. They don't understand the underlying science that they're decoding.
Yes.
So then you got to rely on other people that you, how do you trust them?
I know. Yeah, exactly.
So, it's a huge thing, you know, like when they're like, oh, you know, Z-Dog, do a debunking of, you know, whatever, Peter McCullough and his vaccine thing. It's like, well, shit. Let me go very carefully here.
Yeah.
And I'm going to look at multiple sources and try to figure, and even then I'm going to get some stuff wrong.
You know, I wrote that like, what, I forget, 4,000 word essay in Unheard magazine.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's like, it takes a lot, like 10 hours of my time.
It's huge. It's hugely time intensive.
I know, I have other things to do.
I know.
But I think it was fair to them.
Yeah, no, it was. Yeah. And it was also
because I cut them up when they were wrong. And but there were there are kernels of what they're saying that, you know.
That's the thing. Yeah. If you, if you're on the side of the person who wrote that tweet, they wouldn't even listen to the kernels of truth that McCullough and Malone would say, which is, hey, you know, let's look at the broader implications of policy. Let's look at how this thing is communicated. And that brings us to Fauci. As we get ready.
Wait,
to
the last thing I was about kernels.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean, they don't realize that it's the kernels of truth in there that create the appeal to audience.
That's and why do you trust them?
And if you deny the kernels, I mean, you need to find a way to like, how do you persuade their own audience that they're wrong?
Yeah.
I think you have to acknowledge where they're not wrong.
Yeah,
totally,
that's right. That's right. That's right. If you don't do that, you're already, you're never going to reach that audience.
Yeah. And you're being dishonest because that's not the fair. That's not fair to them.
It's not fair to them. So good point, like with McCullough. So not McCullough, with Robert Malone. So here's a guy, he's got he looks like, you know, he's got the beard.
He looks like a invented Burt Reynolds.
Burt Reynolds with a PhD and an MD. And so, okay, why would someone trust him that doesn't really know all the science of it? Well, it's clear. he, first of all, speaks to some intuitive truths that they feel already, that like this pandemic response has been kind of crazy, that we don't have all this data that we would love to have, that some of these things just don't make intuitive sense, whatever he says, right? Yeah, so you're aligning with him, you trust him, and he's got credentials. Wonderful. Now, why would then I listen to him? What's my impression? When I listen to his thing, because the people are like, could you please debunk this? And I'm like, okay, let me listen. Oh, wow, he's absolutely right about our response. He's absolutely right about the lack of nuance. He's absolutely right about the terrible communication. He's absolutely, okay, now where is he wrong?
Yes, and now he's wrong on all these
things. All the other things that he's saying, he's taking you with him, and then he's telling you a bunch of stuff that just, it's unverifiable, or it's easily contradictable, even with just simple logic.
And what about, I mean, he's on one end of the spectrum. What about on the other end? There's that guy who did his PhD in nutrition from Harvard, and I forget, and he's on Twitter, and he has a huge, and he's always the alarmist, always worried. And he's like, I was the first person to say COVID is a problem, and I'm the first person to say we always have to mask, and COVID's not going away, and monkeypox is a pandemic, and this, and he's alarmist. And like half of what he's saying is totally wrong. He's misinterpreting studies.
Same thing.
And then even like some people who are quoted frequently in the news, they say a lot of things that are totally wrong.
It's the same thing. Keep going.
I saw somebody tweet a graph. It's an observational study of people who got 3 doses versus 4 doses, and it shows the overall survival. And they say the 4th dose saves lives. Look at the difference in the curves. But the curves split immediately after the 4th dose.
Yeah.
In the first day.
It's not possible.
And it's not – and I'm like – come on, dude.
Yeah.
Either your brain don't work or you're bullshitting me. Yeah. The curves cannot split. Even if you think the 4th dose is life-saving, it has to kick in.
Yeah.
It has to make something. How can it work the moment? And the fact it works the moment afterwards is that your study's confounded.
Your study's confounded. Yeah. Exactly right. The people who would get the 4th dose are X, Y, and Z type
of people.
Already
going to live longer.
Yeah, exactly right. But the thing is, even now, so we don't really trust those guys. We don't trust the other guys. So how do we find a place of trust? Well, it means that you have to have these conversations in possibly a long form, nuanced way on a platform that doesn't espouse a particular ideology. Now, the concern I have with the possibility of sensible medicine.
Okay. Oh, good. Some concerns.
What happens if we go down this rabbit hole where we're heterodox for the sake of being heterodox and are just oppositional? Like some of our critics will say we just are contrarians.
I think that the reason I'm less worried about that is that there are a lot of people on this in our team so far who, you know, they kind of sat out COVID and they do other stuff.
Right.
And so it's not going to be COVID only.
Right.
I mean.
Yeah. So it'll be all the things.
It'll be all the things. Like Adam is going to be, I think his first post, he sent me a draft. It's like really about like what it's like to take care of patients.
Yeah.
So it's really about medicine.
Right.
And then I think we talk about the places. I mean, to me, like, I don't know. The reason we talk about the issues we talk about it is like it's interesting to me where like university professors and the academy is on the wrong side of an issue like school closure, which they were on the wrong side. That's an interesting dialogue because they're supposed to be the smart people.
Right.
But like, for instance, should you take blood pressure medicines? We've never talked about it, but it turns out we're not contrarians because I would tell somebody if their blood pressure is 160 over 90, they should take a blood pressure pill. You know?
right.
So there's like thousands of things.
If lifestyle's not fixing it. Yeah.
We don't talk about all the things that we just agree with everyone else on.
Yeah. Yeah. We're focusing on things where we think the dialogue has been skewed.
Skewed.
Yeah. So that's really what it is. Is why would you call it sensible medicine? Well, you're pulling the topics that need some sense into the foreground because stuff where everybody, there's lots of consensus. It's like, that's of course, that's sensible. Like, yeah, we're going to do those things. But what are we talking about that people aren't making sense? Smart people are behaving badly.
Yes. Smart people are saying things like this thread.
Right.
Right. And then the reason why the thread is like, I mean, I think the reality is that more people on one side of this COVID spectrum of beliefs are in university professors and doctors, and people on the other side are more in like other kinds of work.
Yeah.
And that's what makes these kind of errors, I think, really problematic.
Right.
And they are gonna have huge ramifications.
But they're problematic for a couple of reasons too. One's less obvious is that if these guys are wrong, the professors and all these guys about this, right?
And by this we mean like toddler masking.
Masking. We're talking about closing schools. Yeah, toddler masking. Yes. Like 4 doses for a college student.
Right.
Now we may be making it overly hyperbolic. But yes, then what they've done is they've damaged the crucial piece here, which is trusting in some degree in expertise.
Correct.
So we used to trust these. Like I used to trust CDC about a lot of things.
Correct. Me too.
And now I question everything.
Correct. Me too.
So the public's going to do the same thing.
Correct.
And that's the downside of the tribal behavior that we've seen the groupthink that's happened.
And the public is going to be be like everything they say is wrong going forward.
Right.
But there may someday be a moment
where
they drift back to being sensible.
Yeah, exactly.
And then how are you going to win trust?
Right.
You know?
Good example might be, let's look at monkeypox.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Last thing, we got to get a beer.
Monkeypox is a great example. Because people are like, I'm done.
I don't care about monkeypox. Now, here's a disease that we had warning.
Yes.
It was already changing in Africa.
Yeah.
We're seeing it infect other people. It's in an isolated, to begin with, population. You could theoretically target vaccination and treatment to those people. Generally, men who have sex with men so far. There's 8 women who've gotten it documented in the U.S.
But the first thing is you have to be able to say that.
Yes, you have to be able to say that. Now, people were burned during HIV by stigmatizing. There was a sense of stigmatization. So now they're backing off so much that they won't say.
They won't say.
Listen, there's 13,000 cases around the world now, currently. 1,800 or 1,300 in the U.S., and they're almost exclusively, not always, but almost exclusively in men who have sex with men. Mm. Let's look at those communities as the biggest harm reduction we can
do.
And so this kind of thing now, people are like, no. So they're burned by HIV. They won't say truth. Then they're burned by COVID. So public health is like exhausted and nobody's listening to them.
Right.
So nobody's doing anything about it. And the truth is, again, you look at it and you go, well, let's see, nobody's died yet.
Right.
It is a pain in the ass because once this thing becomes endemic in local animal populations, you're never
done.
It's not like smallpox. You can't eradicate it.
And that's what Gottlieb says it's happened.
Yeah, he says it's already happened, which I think he's probably right.
I see.
Walensky was like, well, I'm an optimist. I think we could still do something here. I'm like, well.
Talk about someone who has no trust left.
Right.
I know.
What happened to flattening the curve and squeezing it down so much that we could get it with contact tracing?
What happened to COVID? We know vaccinated people don't transmit the virus.
Right.
Or we have had no reports of myocarditis and we've looked at 200 million people. I was like, wrong and wrong.
Mm. Now, should you panic about monkeypox? No. But should we do something rational about it? You would think. And this is not going to be the end of it. Like, you're going to have zoonotic viruses that come out as the climate shifts and there's more humans in proximity to animals. And
if you sit too close to the Wuhan lab door.
I was just going to say, when you have humans in proximity to a lab that's full of virus.
But I sat by the door.
I sat by the door.
That's a
good way to end this podcast, man.
Yeah. The temperature went up a few degrees while we were talking.
It really got hot in here, and it's not human caused. Oh, you're out of the focus line. There you are.
Oh my God.
I was watching. Don't worry. Okay. It was just when you decided to get jiggy with it.
You know, San Francisco's always cold.
I'll take the heat.
You take the heat?
I'll take the heat once in a while.
I like just refrigerator temperatures.
Refrigerator temperatures. So I don't usually do the tourist thing throughout San Francisco and beyond, but we went the other week because my mom, oh my God, what a Freudian slip. My wife.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Oh dear. It's funny because
And then your next slip will be Calacademy.
I call her mom.
It's just a thing we do.
It's just a thing we do. You know, it's like your Supreme Court, you know, dressing up as RBD.
Yeah, RBG.
So anyways, we went to Sausalito with the kids after hiking Muir Woods. And Muir Woods is amazing. So you have the touristy area. Have you been there?
Long time ago.
Okay, you got to go back. But this is the thing. There's this tourist plank where a bunch of tourists, a lot of European tourists, really high traffic. And you're like, yeah, this is sacred and all, except for all the chattering losers that are walking through here. You take any of the side trails off, it is empty.
Really?
Dead silent.
So you could loosen your N95.
I got out of the Vader helmet.
I see.
And then we started walking freely.
And so it was nice.
Hardly anybody was wearing masks, actually. It was really nice.
Yeah.
And it was sublime. Sublime. Mm. Then we were hungry. We did a 7-mile hike. Didn't even know how long we'd gone. And came back and went to Sausalito, ate at a Greek restaurant called Zalta.
Mm. This is the plug.
I'm plugging them just because.
Proud sponsors of VPZD.
That's Zalta. Right. Zalta, a small restaurant in Sausalito. Didn't even know I was there.
Uh-huh.
But man, it was so good.
Really?
Beautiful, like wonderful outdoor dining, nobody wearing masks. It was just this glorious, wonderful experience. So,
and your mom liked it too.
And my mom loved it. My mom listens to the podcast. She's probably like, what? You have another mom?
All right. Until next time. Yeah. Last, the plugs. Sensible Medicine.
Yeah.
How do you find it? You Google Sensible Medicine, Substack, and you might find it.
And you'll find it, or just check the link that I'll put.
Okay, that's smart.
And sign up.
And you're going to post this video on Sensible Medicine first.
First.
If we can figure out how to do it.
Exclusivity, I know. We'll give it exclusivity for a few days, and then we'll put it on VPZD and on the audio feed. All the audio video stuff.
Okay.
Yeah, and
I guess if we have difficulty posting the video, maybe we'll just post the audio.
We'll post the audio only, yeah.
Unsensible Medicine.
That's right.
Okay, if we have difficulty.
We want it to be exclusive for a few days because people who sign up should get some benefit of
some
listening
benefit.
To us. We're the gold standard
yes.
of Sensible Medicine, you and I.
I think it's a 50% people are coming for the atom. 20%, you know, who yep. knows? I don't know what yep. they're bringing
it's
there.
It's true. It's true.
You never know. You never know.
I think it's the ladies come in for Marty.
From Marty.
Let's be honest. I mean, that guy, you know, you see him at the restaurant.
He knows how to order soup.
He does. He's got an ascot going, you know.
He's probably see him on TV. He's on TV all the time.
Marty is well known. It's interesting. My parents know Marty from TV
because
he's always on the news and they just love him. They're like, oh, is Marty coming on?
That's one thing that I could never do because I've always I turned down a lot of TV stuff over this year.
Yeah, me too. They'll ask and I'll be like, it's not really what I do. You know, and this is the thing.
This is how they do on TV. They're like, and our next guest, Zubin Demania, who is the host of the Z-Dog MD show on available on YouTube, a YouTuber, is here to talk about COVID-19. Zubin, thanks for joining us.
Hi.
Zubin, why are you opposed to children being safe?
It's not so much a question of safety. There's
But masks, do they work or do they not?
Well, this is a complicated question that requires lots of data.
Our listeners need an answer.
Maybe?
The president says that he'll never wear one. What do you say?
Gout?
It is terrible.
Yeah, no, it's terrible. I've done it and it sucks and I never did it again. I did it years ago and I was like, this is not a format for me. Mm-hmm. And this is the thing, like people who are critics, the last thing will say, you know, they'll say, well, these guys are out for attention and all that. Dude, critics. If we wanted attention, we could have our own TV show easily. I've been offered.
All you have to do is take your shirt off. All,
and they'd see how I lift with just nipples. It's just pure nipple.
If you wanted a TV show.
Well, exactly. Anyways.
If we really wanted attention, then
dude, there's so many better ways.
These topics are trash.
They're garbage.
You just go to pure political show.
Totally.
Of course.
Which we would crush, by the way.
Of course.
Yeah, we would kill it.
We understand politics inside and out.
Last thing on trust.
Professional
politics. I trust people who make fun of themselves and who don't take themselves too seriously all the time, who can take themselves down a peg.
That's interesting.
I don't know if that's us, but I like to imagine in my mind, because that's I'm arrogant, true. That I'm that guy.
Yeah. You're like, my greatest weakness is humility.
Humility. That's right.
But actually, you know, being able to joke and relax.
Not take it all too seriously.
Yeah, not take it all too seriously.
You don't see that in the Twitterverse very often.
When you go back to mom later today, you
all right, tell your moms, tell your friends, and we are out. Peace.